Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hello there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, we're continuing a discussion on being a trustee.
Yes.
And this has to do specifically with trusts, living trusts, and what
Correct.
It means to be that personal representative and people involved in that. So why don't you review a little bit about where we've been so far with this subject?
Yeah, this came to light just a while ago when I was talking to a client, and they're not able to manage their own money right now, so they brought in who ends up just being a really close, lifelong personal friend, and we started discussing what the duties and responsibilities of being a trustee will be. And as I'm describing all this, I just see all the color in their face starting to disappear, and I start seeing overwhelm on their face of, oh my gosh, what did I just sign up for? I thought I was just helping a good friend. And so it made me start thinking, well, most people don't know their responsibility and their duties of if they needed to be thrust into this position called a successor trustee. And that would happen if the trust maker ends up being disabled, so they can't manage their money anymore. And we kind of associate that with getting older in life. Mm. What if memory starts to slip? What if you have a health incident? But it could be really at any age. What if you begin to having a bout with cancer or are in a car accident or whatever else life throws at us because we live in a fallen world? And so there might be a time when we need someone else to stand next to us and help assist us with managing our assets.
Other than the spouse.
Other than a spouse. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, when married couples create a revocable living trust, then they are co-trustees and they take up that trusteeship together. So if one of them is not doing well, the other hand is already there. They're already in position and they're usually on all assets as co-trustees. Mm. So whether both spouses need assistance, maybe one has passed away, maybe you're single, then we need to discuss who is going to step in after that. And I mentioned last show, sometimes even in a married couple relationship, one spouse does all the finances and the other spouse really doesn't know about the finances. Mm. So if they're older, they may need to have someone else, even if the spouse is able to assist, you know, it has competency and is able to do that, they still may need to invite the next person into the picture sooner than later because they just have never done it in their lifetime. Mm-hmm. So there's many reasons of why we need a successor trustee. And then when someone passes away, clearly they can't be their own trustee any longer. Right. So therefore, we need a successor trustee at that point in time also. Mm. So last show, we were talking about, well, who should we pick? What are some of the characteristics that we were looking at when talking about making the right election of who is your successor trustee? And of course, this could also be applicable to who is going to be your financial power of attorney or who's going to be your executor slash personal representative if you utilize a will and power of attorney package. So it's applicable regardless of what type of an instrument you use in your estate plan, wills or revocable living trust, which is how much financial experience does that person that you are naming have? So do they manage their own finances well? Are they spendthrifts? So do they tend to spend money? Are they going to be overwhelmed? Is there a huge gap between what they manage? Because if they have an average job and they haven't had an opportunity to build much, are they ready to take over your estate? So if you have been blessed with much more there could be a huge disparity in managing millions of dollars versus hundreds of thousands. Mm. So even if they manage their own money well, are they ready for that challenge? Do they understand the complexities of having much more money compared to investing sums that are not as much? Are they prepared for the risk value? And we also talked about, are they willing and able to work with your financial advisor and other parts of your team to make sure that your finances are going to be used properly for your benefit? So that's where we were in the past conversation. Mm. And I wanted to pick up this idea of successor trustee, because there's some things that Washington law talks about that I want to go over as well. So if we look at the duties, so now we talked about kind of the practical aspects of some of the things you should be looking for when you make a personal election of who is going to be your successor trustee. Again, that could also be the financial power of attorney. So kind of think in terms of who's going to manage my money. Mm. Now, in a trust, so I'm going to talk specifically about a trust for a moment. There are legal duties that are going to attach as soon as somebody becomes a successor trustee. So before I get there, why would somebody then be moved into the position of successor trustee? And again, I've mentioned that briefly, which is the trust maker, the one who created the trust, is their own trustee, but for whatever reason, they might be alive but having a difficult time. Mm. So therefore, if they can't manage their money, the successor trustee needs to move in. And a well-designed trust would have triggers on how that would happen so that somebody isn't trying to wrestle your power away. Mm. It is clear and evident in the document created of how that is supposed to happen. Unfortunately, I see a lot of trusts or financial powers of attorney that are not well designed and do not give full expression of what that should look like. So a well-designed trust should have a clear roadmap on if this is where I'm at, then this person is going to come in and help me manage my finances. So, or if someone passes away, then that's a triggering event and a successor trustee would come in. These are different roles. If you're needing to be a successor trustee to help someone, typically an aging parent, that's a very different role than closing an estate when someone has died. Hmm. Your duty...
Why is it different?
Yeah, your duty... You have different people that you owe a duty to. Hmm. So if mom and dad have a revocable living trust and now you are the successor trustee because both or one of them is having health incidences or memory loss issues, your duty is to the individual, i.e. the parent, that you are helping. And we got to stay on top of monthly bills. Are they set up already to be auto pay? Many people have auto pays. What if we needed to cancel some of the subscriptions? What if they're no longer on Amazon, but we don't want people to start having access to Amazon account, which is attached to their credit card? And so we start getting, there's a lot of things that we need to uncover in assisting an individual and help manage all of those different payments for potentially a longer period of time. Mm. And so what does that look like if we are going to manage those assets and pay the bills and have our parents' best interest in mind? So it can't be my best interest. This is inconvenient. So I'm going to take some shortcuts. Well, is that in the best interest of the parent? So if it's not in the best interest, then, well, got to buckle up, buttercup. It doesn't matter if that's the best thing for you personally. You have a fiduciary obligation. It's called a duty of loyalty and a duty of care by law to make sure that you are doing everything in the best interest of the person that you are caring for and managing their money. Mm. So that's a very different viewpoint than it is if someone passed away. Because now we're trying to chase what's open. So if we have a house, we may need to keep those bills being paid for a period of time until we can clear out the house, until we can then get the house ready to be sold or to be transferred to a beneficiary.
Can these be different people, like while I'm still alive or one of us is still alive, you know, ex-child is the trustee? But once we're both gone, then it goes to my trusted legal person or accountant.
Absolutely. Yes. They do not need to be the same person. In most circumstances, it is, but it's not always. So absolutely. And sometimes one child is living closer to you, and they may be in the best position to step in due to proximity and just simply due to where they are positioned in life. Maybe their kids are grown up, they're out of the house, and they would have more time and energy to assist you versus another child who you would entrust with your finances, who might even be a little bit better at managing money, but they still have minors in the house. They're still doing the driving to soccer practice and being mom or dad, or they run their own company and they're already, their time is extremely limited. That might not be the best person, even though that might be your first instinct. So when selecting somebody, you need to look at the holistic picture of who they are, how they manage their life, and whether or not they could actually perform that function. So in caring for somebody, the duty is to that individual. However, when someone passes away, we're not trying to maintain or set up things for a long period of time. We're actually trying to close things out. And now we have a fiduciary duty to all the beneficiaries, by the way, of which the successor trustee might also be a beneficiary.
Yeah.
But that comes down to the duty of loyalty. The duty of loyalty is you must be loyal to the beneficiaries as a whole unit. You cannot single yourself out. You cannot do something that is going to give yourself an advantage, or I want the house, so I am going to work it out to where I'm getting the house, even though everyone else is going to get their same cut, right? So let's say that everyone gets their proper percentage, but you get the house because you wanted the house. Well, did you go through a process of making sure that the other beneficiaries had an equal opportunity for the home? So a duty of loyalty means you're looking at the collective group, not holding one out over anyone else. Versus the duty of care is a prudent person, a reasonable standard of a prudent person of how are you managing the assets. So duty of loyalty, to which people group do you owe a duty? If you're helping mom and dad, you owe the loyalty to them and them alone. It's they are their finances, and you owe your loyalty to them to ensure their best care. And their duty of care then would be, am I managing those assets properly? Am I using my own investment philosophy? Or have I leaned into their financial advisor? Am I getting their taxes done timely? And multiple other things are the duty of care. So they are very different, I guess, roles pending. Are you taking care of somebody as a successor trustee? Or has someone died? And are you taking up and cleaning up the estate to gather and marshal all the assets so that they can be properly distributed, again, with that duty of loyalty, even if you are one of the beneficiaries? It's a very difficult viewpoint, but those are some of the legal duties in each of those instances.
Everything involved in being a trustee, how to pick a trustee, and so forth. That's the subject this week. If you're intrigued by Paul's approach on this subject, you want to find out more about his services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website. It's the best place to get some more information on us, communicate with us, past podcasts, and there's also upcoming educational opportunities. It can all be found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show, and I want to personally invite you to an upcoming educational workshop happening on Tuesday, May 6th, starting at 6 p.m. This will cover the basics of estate planning. What's the difference between a will and a trust? What do power of attorneys do? And much, much more. Would love to meet you. We're going to be doing this by Zoom, or you can come to the office and meet me in person. And it all happens on Tuesday, May 6th at 6 p.m. You can head to legacyandfaith.com and there's sign up instructions and opportunities found there. So head over to legacyandfaith.com and sign up for our Tuesday, May 6th, 6 p.m. educational workshop. See you there.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
And how to apply those biblical principles when figuring out who you want to be the trustee in your living trust. It can be a little complicated, different levels of involvement. And Paul, you want to continue on how do we pick the right person to be a trustee?
Yeah. Washington law also has an interesting section that many people don't know about, which is who's disqualified as a trustee? Who cannot be a trustee? So this would be an important thing.
There are certain people like that.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Like a felon, maybe?
I don't know. That's exactly one of them.
Somebody who's currently in jail?
Yep, you have hit the bullseye. So number one, a minor cannot be. Now, that's by Washington law. So a minor is anyone who's under the age of 18. So you can select an 18-year-old, but I'm telling you, please don't do that. Mm. So even though they may be considered an adult for multiple other purposes, I have never met an 18-year-old who could be a trustee. And I know parents, you're out there thinking, oh, well, you haven't met my 18-year-old. They're amazing. I'm sure they are. Please still don't name them as a successor trustee.
But in different stages, maybe they're building their trust and the person is currently 18 or 15, but they know someday, you know, they're going to be 35.
Absolutely.
They think that they're going to live, parents think they're going to live a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So at what age is a good age to start handing things over? So legally, you can do it at the age of 18. So there's the legal part of it all, right? So the statute says minor. So minors are disqualified, which means non-minors are not unless there's something else going on. Mm. Is it practical to elect a 19-year-old? Well, so now we get into kind of wisdom instead or practicality, which is most 18, 19 through young 20-year-olds are figuring out life. Scientists, I don't know who they are, but I'm sure there's studies out there that the brain isn't even fully developed until the age of 25. I've met quite a few people who I'm not sure that their brains are fully developed much later, but that's okay. So I guess science says 25, a brain is fully developed. And most young individuals are going through college. They're going through life changes. They're trying to find spouses and determine this thing called life. What am I going to do for the rest of my life? And is that the time that you need to pull them out and say, I am going to saddle you with this responsibility called taking care of all my finances if I'm disabled or if I die? Yeah, they're going through a massive grieving process and they're younger and you're going to have them do all the finances. Mm. Boy, that's a pretty, pretty big duty to fulfill, even though they are legally able to do it. Is that where you want someone that age? So what is the right age? Well, you did mention it. You're watching them. You're seeing their life. You're watching their financial maturity. You're seeing how they're managing work and family and everything else. And at what age? Well, there's no magic age. The law says 18. Just don't be a minor. But Is there a more practical approach? That's where we have to lean into. You're watching your children. You're watching your family. You know your siblings. You know whether someone else you can fully trust in, that they would fulfill those duties of loyalty and care. So would they be loyal to you? Would they invest? Would they have the care to manage it as a reasonable, prudent person? So that's where we lean into the clients a lot of, well, who's your tribe? Who do you trust within that grouping? Mm-hmm. Now, so number one is a minor is disqualified according to Washington law. Also, a person who is not of sound mind. Okay, that sounds very reasonable as well, correct? So if we have somebody who has a disability, who's going through their own personal struggles, and they are deemed to be of an unsound mind, then they can do it. And then, yeah, you hit the nail on the head, which is the one that people don't think about, which is a persons who have been convicted of, listen to this word, any felony. So then people come back, well, what type of felonies? Any felony. If you have ever been convicted, now not just accused, not through trial and not found guilty, but have been convicted of any felony, whether it has to do with money or not, that person by Washington law is disqualified. So any felony or any crime involving moral turpitude. That's a great word, isn't
that
it?
Seems
moral
kind of broad.
Turpitude. Mm-hmm. What that really means is someone who has failed with money. So if they've been convicted of a white collar crime of embezzling, but it didn't raise to the levels of being a felony. So if someone has moral turpitude, in other words, something that is character, that would demonstrate that their character should not be put into this position, they would be disqualified as well. So anyone who's committed a felony in Washington state, any felony, not the Washington law, there, that's a better way to say it, says that they are disqualified from being a trustee. So your child had a rough go in their young 20s. They were convicted of a felony. They turn their life completely around by God's grace. They're still not able to be, according to the law, a successor trustee. And that might be a hard pill for some people to swallow.
Yeah.
I get you, but the law is the law. I just read it, that I'm literally reading it, what the statute says. So I'm not trying to make an interpretation of it. This is just simply what you can find in RCW 11.36.021, in case you are interested in writing that down and going and seeing for yourself. So that's who is disqualified from being a trustee. So as we kind of wrap up today's discussion of who should you elect as a trustee, then we've talked about, are they able to do the job? Are they practically positioned? Is their lifestyle able to help step in, even if they have great intent and they would be the best election? Are they able? Are they willing? Have you talked to them about the position of doing this?
It shouldn't be a surprise.
You hope not. However, like, sometimes it is.
So, Mom and Dad voted you to be the trustee.
Yeah, and it's just
first
like,
time
oh my
it.
Goodness. Yeah. So are they willing to do it? And then are they able to fulfill the duty of loyalty? Again, that is, are they going to manage, are they going to look at the beneficiaries holistically instead of hold themselves higher or what their desires are? Now, what I have generally seen is that a trustee will put their needs last instead of first. But there are always the occasion of, well, Can I just stay in the house? Are you going to pay rent? Well, no, I was just going to stay in the house. Okay, that doesn't work. That is breaching your duty of loyalty to all the beneficiaries when looking at them as a whole.
And almost always the trustee is a beneficiary, would you say, most of the time?
Oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And so
they have a stake.
Yeah, that creates a little bit of a pickle to make sure that you're really looking at everybody equally, including yourself. In that duty of care, which is how do you care over the finances, there is also in a trust environment that you have a duty of investment. So you do have a duty to invest the money properly. Just sitting on cash may or may not be rising to fulfilling that duty of care. Mm. It could. I'm not saying it's an absolute line, but making sure that it is properly invested for the benefit of the beneficiaries, okay? In irrevocable trust, you have to look at contingent beneficiaries simultaneously as the current beneficiary. So many different viewpoints, and there's just so much more to talk about in this topic. So we're going to hop right back onto this topic of who do we select as a trustee? What are their duties? And what responsibility are we giving them? So we'll continue this series.
Okay, being a trustee, the subject this week. You like the way Paul approaches this subject and many others, and you want help from him. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us, and it all can be found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.